Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. Today I'm joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Nick, how are you doing today?
Very good, thanks, Coach Steve. How are you?
I'm really well, Nick. Now, this week is an exciting week, Nick. You know why?
Oh, why? Please tell me.
Well, no, maybe talking about this day in particular. So we're recording this podcast today on Tuesday the 14th of June. Yesterday was a public holiday, so Coach Nick and I didn't get a chance to catch up to record this podcast. But today is a very exciting day because it is my mum's birthday.
Happy birthday.
Yes, Steve's you've got to mom. Celebrate your mum, right? So happy birthday to my mum. She's the ripe old age of 54. Well, she's probably celebrating her 21st birthday today. But yep. Happy birthday to my mum. And like always in the challenge world, it's an exciting week this week because we have launched our brand new M Challenge app. Nick, how exciting is that?
So exciting. So exciting.
So I'd like to congratulate or thank everybody who joined us yesterday. So yesterday was our launch day on the app, which was the 13th of June. I want to thank everybody for being one of the first people to download the M Challenge app and go through the registration process and finally get into the app. We had a few speed bumps along the way, but just like with any new technology and any new product that we're launching, we had some unforeseen challenges, which are mostly resolved now. So if you're listening to this and are still facing some challenges, please, please, please email us at support@mchallenge.com.au so we can help you. Our team is super quick at responding via email. That's where we're living right now. So if you have any problems, please, please email us. We'll help you out.
Yeah, and it's excellent that we're doing this now because we haven't even started prep week. So we've got a lot of time up our sleeves to iron it out.
That's right. So prep week kicks off on the 4th of July. So Independence Day, 4th of July. and that's when you'll be able to access your training plan, nutrition plan. So there's still a bit of time. There's still lots of time to join us. You'll be able to sign up all the way up until our start date of the challenge, which is the 11th of July. And even a little bit after that, you'll still be able to sign up. So if you're sitting on the fence, that's cool. Mm-hmm. Hopefully you tip over the fence and come join us and celebrate this very first M Challenge, which we're excited to bring to you.
Yeah, very exciting. I cannot wait. I don't need to wait anymore.
Now, talking about a few of the features of the app right now. So firstly, talk about price or investment, as you like to think about it. We have a special launch price of $99, okay, $99, and that will be our ongoing return challenger price moving forward. So if you are a return challenger, meaning that you've done the max or the max team challenge in the past and you'd like to join us in the very first M challenge, you get this special price, $99. That's not all. If you sign up before the 27th of June, you will get 10% off if you use the code MVIP10. So you can use that at checkout, MVIP10, capital letters, get 10% off. So it ends up coming to a nice, pretty number of $89.10.
That's really good.
Yeah, such a good price for 12 weeks of training nutrition. You got the coaches, Coach Nick and I, helping you in the forum. You have a range of features on the app, and of course you are eligible for our prizes and our judging process. So lots of value for a low price of $89.10. Got to put in the 10 cents, right, Nick?
Absolutely, you got to put in the 10 cents. So it's a few coffees, really.
Yeah,
especially down the coast.
Yeah.
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 It's about three coffees.
three coffees with inflation and maybe a tip thrown in. Yeah. Now, talking about some of the features on the apps, the first one is our steps leaderboard. Okay. Mm. So super summary of the way the steps work is the M Challenge app pulls information from the Apple Health and the Google Fit app on your iOS or Android device. So if you are using something like a smartwatch or any other sort of smart technology that counts your steps, and there's a discrepancy between, let's say, your maybe Fitbit or Garmin watch and then the steps on the M Challenge app, you may need to review the connection between, let's say, your Fitbit and your Apple Health app, or your Garmin and your Apple Health app, or your Fitbit and the Google Fit app. Okay, so you may need to Google, what the problem might be. A few troubleshooting issues that I've seen that resolve the problem is having both apps open at the same time. So let's say if you're using Garmin specifically, if you have the Garmin app open and the Apple Health app open, it will create a sync, and then that sync will automatically push over to the M Challenge app. So if you do want to be really specific with your steps, you just need to make sure the sync is working well.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, you don't need to have a smartwatch. You can just mm-hmm. use the step counter on your device. So most modern devices, if you bought it in the last 3 or 4 years, will have a step counter built into your iPhone or Android phone, which will automatically count your steps. You don't even need a smartwatch. Although the step counter on your device might not be super accurate, maybe you leave the device on a table and you go get a glass of water, come back, so it won't count those steps. So it might not count your full daily activity. Like for me, for example, I don't take my phone when I walk the dog, so that's not going to count those steps there when I'm using my phone. So just something to consider if you are going to use an activity tracker or use your phone, especially if you want to be competitive in our daily steps leaderboard.
Yeah, and don't forget that tomorrow is a new day. So some days you can be, some days you can leave your phone at home, have a bit of a balance of both.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The other feature, big one that you can access right now is the forum. So you can head on over to the forum. You can start a conversation with other challengers. You can ask us questions about training, nutrition, the app, you name it. Coach Nick and I will basically live on the forum now that the forum is open. And I guarantee you'll be able to get a quicker answer from us via the forum than via other means, such as if you try to, contact us via the Facebook social hub, or maybe try to tag us on Instagram or other ways to try to contact us. The quickest way would be through the forum, and I can guarantee you the best possible answer via the forum than via other crowdsourced ways to get an answer, such as through our Facebook social hub.
Yeah, definitely. It feels pretty special, the forum, because you can only get in there if you get the app, and it's really cute and cool.
It is.
Yeah.
The other feature you have access to right now is all of our content. So you can listen to this podcast on the app. So maybe you're in the app right now. So hello if you're in the app.
Hello.
And you can also read a whole range of articles that Coach Nick and I have created around training, nutrition, and mindset. So if you're unsure about maybe nutritional principles or training principles, or what the hell is creatine, and why is sleep important for my body transformation journey, you can go read some of those articles right now. And Nick and I endeavor to add more articles over time. So if you have any big questions or maybe topics you'd like to learn more about, you can reach out to us on the forum. We'll most likely create an article for you, and you will see the learn section grow over time.
How cool would that be if you had your own article, if you were a muse for an article? So
yeah.
Do send us in some ideas and you will get your article.
Now, talking about training and nutrition, yes, you will be able to set up your training and nutrition plan from the 4th of July. Now, when I say set up, there are a few questions to set up the process. So the training plan is going to ask you what plan you want to follow. At the moment, there's 5 plans with a goal to increase that up to 10, which will most likely happen between now and the 4th of July. So you need to select your program. There's a range of information about each program, depending on the length you want to train, what equipment you have available to you, and then your overall goal. Now, most of our programs are suitable for both fat loss and muscle building goals. And the actual specificity of those goals, either weight loss or weight gain, will be determined by your nutrition targets. Okay, so if your goal is weight loss or weight gain, you might follow the exact same program, just you might change your nutrition targets. Okay.
Yep.
Once you select your training program, it will ask you your training age, meaning if you're a beginner, intermediate, or advanced. Then it's going to ask you to select which days you'd like to work out. So maybe you work full-time and you are just completely unable to get to the gym Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, but let's say Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, you want to train back to back to back. Okay, you can do that as long as it fits within your schedule. So there's probably no right or wrong way to train or when to train, as long as it fits in within your schedule, which you get to pick.
Yeah, it's usually best way is what you're going to stick to.
And finally, around the nutrition plan, when you go to set up your plan, it's going to ask you a few questions, such as your age, your height, your weight. Then it's going to ask you your goal, which is in this really nice sliding bar. So if your goal is maybe to gain just a little bit of weight, or maybe gain some serious weight versus lose a little bit of weight versus lose a lot of weight, so you can adjust that scale accordingly, which is going to scale your caloric goal. Once you input that information, it's going to ask you to complete a filters tab, meaning to filter out certain foods from your meal plan. Then your meal plan gets created. And if you were to filter out certain foods, such as you don't want to have any dairy products, it's going to put a little icon next to any dairy products. You just need to select that and choose a food item you'd prefer to eat instead of that dairy item. Okay, so that will be our meal plan. We've got a range of recipes over, I think it's over 200 now recipes.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I keep adding more and more, actually.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Quite a number of recipes. And an updating shopping list. So as you go through your meal plan and change certain items, so let's say if you change from beef to chicken or from you know, nuts to avocado or whatever your goal is, that will update on your shopping list. And that shopping list has a nice little tick box function, so you can take that to the shops, right? So take the Coles or Woolies, and you can tick off when you buy certain foods.
Yeah, that's pretty exciting.
It really is. It really is. Other than that, you know, there's a whole range of other features which are pretty straightforward, such as setting goals or writing journal posts. Now, with that journal post, it is very private to you. So previously, you were able to see other individuals' journal posts, but at the moment, it's only just for you. So as you upload things into your journal, think of it like a diary. You know, only you are going to see that, and that can be a nice private way to keep track of your challenge journey.
Yeah, yeah, really, really exciting. I can't wait for that bit.
Now, the final thing here is, when do we upload our start photo? So the start photo will be available from the 4th of July. So you will be able to download the registration document. That will be available on the app as the big announcement and the homepage from the 4th of July. So you'll be able to download that. You will either need to you know, download it and print it off and hold it up, or you may need to do... it on a device. You might hold the start document on your device and maybe get a second camera to take a photo of yourself, and then you'll be able to upload that directly onto the app. So these are all exciting things to come. You have until the 4th of July for prep week to begin, and then we'll be kicking off the challenge on the 11th of July.
Yeah, and don't worry, we're here to answer questions and guide you all the way through. So as you start downloading the app, any questions that you have, shoot them through onto the forum and we can get started with all of that.
Now, Nick, let's move on to our next segment here. We have our NSVs. So yes. That stands for our non-scale victories, where we like to celebrate those victories that might not be related to maybe training directly or maybe the number on the scales. So, Nick, tell us, do you have an NSV this week?
I do. And one day we'll get back to looking at everyone else's. But today, my NSV is my wonderful trip that I made with my family down the Great Ocean Road. We actually went to the 12 Apostles, which I think there are about 5 now. But it was important that our kids got to see that, even though they were like, it takes 8 hours to get to a couple of rocks. But yeah, we had some photos with that. But I think the biggest NSV would be that we didn't let the kids take their devices at all, even though we're talking about devices here and how great they are. I think teenagers sometimes could get a little bit stuck in that trap. And so as a family, we spent a lot of time together and we exercised and just did some good stuff in the fresh air. And it was good to know that our kids are human, which is fantastic. So that's my NSV, a nice little trip with the family.
I love that.
Yeah.
Do you reckon they'll ever rename the apostles and maybe call them the four apostles?
Or, well, I don't think as many people would go.
No, no. It's not as exciting if it's like the two apostles.
I know. Right? If there's no apostles there, I don't know what they're going to do.
Would they just call it the apostle and just be one?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Unless they construct some more. But it's pretty cool. Have you been?
Maybe when I was in high school.
Yeah. You know, I think that's the same as my kids now. They'll say that maybe.
Yeah. But I'm probably going to have to take baby George.
Yeah.
Down to the apostles, if he remembers.
Take him when he's a bit older, because it's such a big trip that, yeah, it's right. Better if they remember.
Yep. Nick, I've got an NSV, and I think I'm going to steal the NSV for the M Challenge team, which is the launch of the app.
Okay, right. So you're going to do a Seinfeld big salad.
Yeah, basically, right? So I'm going to steal it from the entire team, and that's going to be my NSV. It's been an exciting couple of weeks as we get closer and closer to this project launch, and it's not over yet. So behind the scenes, we are working to resolve and iron out different bugs and issues. And that's been lots of back and forth over the past 24 hours with our developers and the rest of our team. It's been exciting times for everybody. It's not the end. And that's my victory. I think it's a win.
Yeah, I think he did a really good job yesterday. I was trying not to read my phone while we were going through the twists and turns of the Great Ocean Road. And it kind of went in and out of reception. But I was very proud that you kept it all going through any technical glitches and stuff. And well done.
No, we made it. We can't do it unless we're a team, right?
So yeah, true. And I think it's really good that any bugs and things, which are always bound to happen, are getting ironed out now.
That's right.
So huge NSV for the M Challenge and you guys.
Now, if you are experiencing an NSV, let us know. We'd like to highlight you in our podcast. So you can post about it in our Facebook social hubs where we're able to see it, or on Instagram if you tag at m.challenge.official. Previously, we used to find lots of our NSVs through the journal, but I think moving forward, we can't actually see your journal.
No.
So you need to celebrate your NSV. So if you are experiencing NSV, show us, show the challenge, show the M Challenge community, and you can post that on the Facebook social hub or tag us on Instagram, and we can feature you in this podcast.
Yeah, don't forget to tag us, you know, M Challenge, the new Instagram, M Challenge Official.
That's right.
And yeah, we're very excited. We'll probably repost that, and you'll get fame.
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 Fame. Nick, let's move on to our next segment here, which is the Coach's Corner, where we offer our tip for the week. So, Nick, take us away. What advice do you have for us?
Speaking of fame, not at all, but probably being a mum is the least famous thing that you can do because you don't get a lot of recognition. No whinging, but on your mum's birthday as well, I get to talk about this. So that's a bit cool.
There you go, mum. If you listen to my podcast, which you do, I know you do, you can learn about.
You know what? She's already through it. You're out the door, so she doesn't need to worry about any of this. Tick and tick. It's more of a, I think we'll probably get quite a few people that maybe are rejoining after having kids or maybe even never exercised before and deciding to make themselves a priority for once. So just a few tips that I have regarding how to fit your own well-being into your schedule, because I often get, especially when the kids were younger and I used to maybe put them up on social media, you know, how do you manage it all? So these days they can actually be left at home while I go and do stuff. So it's a lot easier. That's probably just a little hack on the side. They do get old enough that you can leave them for a couple of minutes and they won't necessarily turn on the oven. But once Zara did put a cookie in the microwave that went for 15 minutes, but we won't worry about that. Pretend that that didn't happen. So the first one is you want to set motivating goals for yourself. So it might not be something that where you say, I'm going to be able to get to the gym and do weights 6 days a week. That might actually demotivate you because something might happen to you where you might not be able to get there. So something that is going to motivate you is something that you can generally achieve. So when my kids were younger, I did go to the gym and things like that. But the first thing I did when they were really little was walk everywhere. So I just shoved them in a pram and walked and walked and walked. And that was made me feel so good. I felt like I got out there when they were old enough to go to the park. They did that. I met some other mums and that was really good. So you can always start there. There's nothing wrong with that. Then you can decide your overall fitness goal. So it might be something specific like, run a 5K, or it could be maintain my fitness level or reach what I used to be before I was pregnant, and just chip away at that. So there's nothing wrong with just taking your time. There's no pressure and you don't have to make it body related. It's often really good if it's fitness related or some sort of a strength goal, or, an achievable goal where you can do something other than worry about the way that you look. Because I promise you, it ends up working out in the end if you don't stress too much about it. Don't go on Instagram and look at people like, your Kim Kardashians and things like that. I mean, not that you guys need to hear that from me, but just in case you did, unfollow those people that are, a bit demotivating on Instagram. You'll find that there's a whole bunch of real people out there that keep it a little bit more real than those. Choose the right kind of exercise. So that's another thing. So when my kids were younger, I did a lot of Pilates because that particular Pilates place had a bit of a childcare thing going on. So it was easy to take. I took Zara with me in her capsule until she was about 8 months old. I think I squashed her in there and held her in there until I couldn't anymore. And that was really good because I didn't have to rely on anyone else. So that was really good. You don't have to always do things where you feel just because everybody else weight trains, you have to weight train. You got to do stuff that you are going to be able to stick to. So if it's not feasible at that time, if your gym doesn't have a creche, the other thing is you can try and find one with a creche and try and book that time in advance. But yeah, walking, Pilates, yoga, anything like that is fantastic. The other thing is, since I guess, well, not just the pandemic, but just in general, exercising at home is a thing now, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like you can really exercise at home. You can, you know, buy gym equipment. You can buy, I think you guys even have a reformer, don't you? But I mean, that's pretty next level.
Yeah. Well, both my partner and I come from Pilates backgrounds. Yeah. So have a reformer.
You got a bit of a discount one.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know that you can get spin bikes. You can, but you can also get easily dumbbells and things like that. And on our app, we have a home option. So that is something that you can start to fit in, even if it's half an hour. We have, you know, shorter options, but in general, half an hour, something like that is enough to just elicit some change in you and definitely your mental state as well, which then rolls into the physical. You'll feel like eating better. You'll feel like looking after yourself a little bit more. It's all kind of a roll-on effect. So exercising at home is fantastic. You don't have to just worry about what people are doing at the gym. That will come. So, like, as I said to you, like, I'm good at the gym now. I mean, I'm okay. Like, I'm not the best ever, but, like, as in, I feel like I know my way around the gym. But that did not happen when my kids were that age. You know, I was doing body pump classes because that's what I could fit into the timetable. Who cares? So what? I was like, I thought I was really cool because I was squatting like the 20 kilos, but it was hard at the time. And it was probably not even all the way down. No way. Yeah, the other thing is that you can start kind of eating smart. So because if you are at home a little bit more, or you have a little bit more time, it doesn't mean you can cook more, don't get me wrong, but it just means that you can plan your meals more. So you can kind of, if you're like, often we are the ones doing the shopping, or, you know, if your partner's like awesome enough to do the shopping, then they're also awesome enough to listen to your bossiness about what to buy. So, you know, just see if you can start to get that, the food that's sort of more nourishing into you. So I was speaking to a lady the other day who has a young child, and she was saying she wakes up and just feels like a chocolate brownie. So I said, look, instead of, because that's probably tiredness, being up all night, that sugar rush, I said, look, instead of me saying to you, that's ridiculous, don't eat it, perhaps make something like an overnight oat that has a chocolate vibe to it, like a chocolate protein powder. So you're not actually missing out on that chocolate taste. You just have to substitute it. So it's about thinking about replacing things, because it's stupid. Her brother is apparently somebody who, you know, only eats sort of like protein and a couple of vegetables, nothing else, and very, very strict. And he was telling her to go on that diet. And it just didn't fit with what she was asking me. So I just said, you know, eat smart, make swaps, just those little swaps, like, you know, make a bit of a slice out of the oats and the protein powder and maybe some egg whites, things like that. Look up those sorts of things and substitute that. Make sure you get your water in and get your steps in. And I even told her that. She said, that's actually doable. And she said, where do I buy some protein powder? And then I directed her to us. And then, yeah, so just the other thing is maximize movement. So even I'm doing that at the moment because I've got my show coming up. I don't even really have a lot of steps that I'm meant to do at the moment. But what I'm just being really careful of is that I don't just go to the gym and then sit down all day, because we work. We can be quite sedentary unless you and I actually get out there. Like, our job, okay, we'll train, but other than that, we don't really do much. Like, mostly we're on computers, aren't we? We're kind of office-y people.
Yeah.
So you've got to really think about maximizing your movement. So for me, you're just going to say you are ridiculous, but I've turned my house cleaning into a really kind of extravagant thing where I'll go up and down the stairs quite a few times, that sort of stuff. And I noticed that it's actually just that has made a little bit of a difference in just my movement, in what I'm trying to achieve with my goals. So I would just say maximize that movement. Especially I like the idea of doing that in the afternoon. I used to think that getting up early, which I still do, was the best thing ever. But then the thing is, you can tend to sit down for the rest of the day if you tire yourself out too much. My new hack is see if you can get out sometime in the afternoon.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I like that.
Thank you.
Afternoon step goal.
Yeah, because you really, if you get up at 5 like I do and then go to the gym, then for the rest of the day you give yourself a hall pass to do nothing. Whereas if you spread it out throughout the day, even though I like to get stuff over and done with, if you spread it out throughout the day, you actually end up moving more.
Mm.
I know that seems so...
No, it's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think people label it like the lazy athlete.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I can be an extremely lazy athlete, especially like even with triathlon, you do all your training early in the morning and then I just sit there and then you can tend to eat.
Mm.
You just go, oh, I'm hungry, I did all my exercise, and then you just throw it all out. But if you go for a walk in the afternoon, that's really good.
Yeah, you might find that walk like peps you up again.
Yeah, it does. It actually peps you up again. It peps everybody up. Mm. And yeah, if you're happy... Your kids will feel that as well. Like, they don't want an unhappy parent. So it's a really good idea to try and carve some time out. And I know that some people only have early morning, and that's fine too. But it's just little hacks that I had thought of. And the reason that I did it is because somebody asked me, although I wasn't in a... I think I was in like the supermarket or something. I don't think I was actually like in a professional aspect, but then I thought, oh, just in case anyone out there is wondering, because it doesn't have to be extreme. And that's what I told her. I said, like, rather than taking stuff away, why don't you try adding stuff? So add steps, add water, add those healthier options, and then see what happens.
Yeah. Mm. I like that. I think as a new parent myself, I have a lot more empathy now for other parents, where before maybe it was a bit more sympathy, where I was kind of like, oh yeah, they're their parents. And I didn't quite understand. Then now as a new parent, you know, my boy's only 9 months old now.
Yeah.
I've quickly understood the challenges of parents. And, you know, I was a naive trainer once where I would say things like, oh, you've got to make time. And
I know.
You know, you've got to eat well and you've got to do your meal prep. And, you know, that kind of goes out of the window when you've got a kid screaming at you or, you know, I'm not at the toddler phase yet, even though my boy's standing up and, you know, shuffling and things like that. But once he's running around, gosh, that'll be a whole another experience.
Definitely.
One thing I've noticed is that how quickly... let's say the nutrition side of things, not just food, like the nutrition side of things kind of shifts. Now, I live in a lifestyle where fitness is a high priority, both for myself and my partner. But since baby, it's almost like my boy is eating better than I am.
Yeah.
You know, he would have, you know, like salmon for lunch and then I'll have like a sandwich or something, right? Or for dinner, you know, he might have like this, you know, extravagant meal, which is very highly nutritious, not just good food or anything like that, nutritious food. And then I might choose just to have something like, oh, I might just have like genuinely like a tomato and like a slice of chicken or something like that. You know, so like, I don't
random combos.
Right. It's like, I'm tired. I like whatever. Yeah. I'm just like, I don't need anything extravagant. Right.
Yeah.
So I'm getting the energy in, but then the nutrition side of things is slowly shifting.
Yeah.
Does that make me a bad person? No, I'm a human. I'm a parent. Right. And that's where I can see things change. I really like what you said, Nick, where the idea of like adding food to it, where you could have like, you know, chocolate brownie, but if you add something to it, let's say you add like a protein powder, it turns it from just like a low nutritional value food into like a higher nutrition value food by adding like a protein powder to a brownie. So you still get your brownie fix, right? But then you also get some good quality nutrition as well. So
and you get your oats and the texture, and also just the feeling of having made it yourself, I think makes you feel a little bit better, because it's also about how you feel when you're eating these foods, you know, like the chocolate brownie, you can eat it, but then 99% of the time you're going to get that sugar rush and then feel like shit and then feel angry at yourself and then cascade of all that stuff happens. But I'm glad that you can understand.
I can understand now.
Yeah.
I was once blind, now I see.
Oh my gosh, amazing grace.
Look, Nick, I'd like to talk about part 3 of my nutrition for fat loss. We're going to be talking about nutritional periodization. Ooh, big fancy word. Okay, let's break it down. Nutritional periodization. Let's talk about the fire analogy that we've used for a couple of weeks now. So if this is your first podcast listening to my little series here, make sure you go check out last week, the week before's part 3. We're going to talk about this idea of a fire, and that fire represents kind of our energy requirements, and also maybe a bit of like our body weight, our mass, right? So the bigger our fire, the more fuel we require. That rhymes.
Oh, wow.
And then, you know, if we wanted to make our fire smaller, we need to give it less fuel and the fire slowly burns down. But then as that fire burns down, it becomes less of this, you know, big hungry fire that's going to, you know, like burn and break down things, right? So when we're looking at our body transformation journey, we're either trying to actively make our fire bigger, like we're trying to, you know, build muscle, make our fire bigger. And as our fire gets bigger, it requires more fuel. Or we're trying to make our fire smaller. Maybe we're going through a weight loss journey, so we need to provide it less fuel. But then as we provide it less fuel, it becomes a smaller fire, has, you know, less energy in it, which can face some challenges. So Let's talk about nutritional periodization, which is this concept a little bit more theoretical, a little bit more advanced. So this might be better for someone who might be a little bit more of a Boy Scout, who has good control over their fire, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe less of someone who's, you know, brand new to camping and doesn't really know how to make a fire or control a fire. This is someone who maybe has been training for a while, has been dieting for a while, who has some good control over their food intakes. And we're talking a little bit more of strategy, theoretical strategy, and what might be most optimal to make the most out of your fire, okay? So there's three kind of goals with our fire or with our weight loss, weight gain, body composition goals. We're either trying to lose weight, we're trying to gain weight, or we're trying to maintain our weight, okay? So let's talk about maintenance here first. So the concept of maintenance is that we're trying to keep our fire the same. We're trying to keep our body weight the same. And this can be suitable for those who you know, are enjoying where they are right now. So the definition of maintenance is where our body weight might only fluctuate up and down, you know, maybe 0.5% per week. So, you know, if you are, let's say, 100 kilos like I am around at the moment, over the course of a week, my body weight might go kind of up to 100.5, might go down to 99.5. And the best way to measure that is get multiple data points throughout the week, maybe every single day or every second day, and then average out the number, because we know that our body weight can fluctuate with how hydrated we are, you know, how much carbohydrates we eat, how much salt we consume, you know, if we're training, all these other variables that kind of can manipulate our body weight changes. So if we are in a position of maintenance, this can be great for someone who, yeah, just wants to enjoy where they are. Maybe you've lost a lot of weight and you just want to enjoy being lean or being strong, whatever it is. But, you know, there is a time when, you know, maintaining our weight is just kind of like, you know, spinning the wheels. We can't expect our fire to change, right? Like, think about when you go camping, what's exciting about a fire is when you build a fire, make it bigger, that's exciting. Yeah, I'm building this big bonfire. Or what's also exciting is turning that bonfire into something small, like, you know, maybe like a firefighter in a weirdly exciting way. You know, they're bringing down the fire. So it's exciting when we see a change, and sometimes just kind of maintaining the fire isn't really exciting. You know, we're just spinning our wheels, and that can lead to, you know, demotivation and such. So if your goal is just to maintain, that can be great. You just need to be aware that, you know, maintenance over a long period of time, you know, can be a little bit, you know, a bit boring, realistically. And you might need to have more structured goals to change your physique. We go, yeah, I'm going to go through a structured weight gain phase and then a structured weight loss phase. So in terms of time-wise, that in terms of maintenance, I'd recommend, you know, about 6 weeks minimum for maintenance, just to allow you to enjoy that. And you can do maintenance indefinitely, but again, you know, there are some limitations because you can just lose interest in this whole thing, okay? Let's talk about the weight loss kind of idea. So nutritional periodization, if your goal is weight loss, or in another way, fat loss, you know, we're trying to make our fire smaller. What rate should we lose weight at? The best kind of rate of weight loss is about 0.5 to 1% of our body weight per week. Okay, per week. So anything less than that, you know, let's say you're losing 0.1% per week, can just lead to low motivation. You know, you're not seeing much change on the scales. So that might mean you need to either decrease your calories further, so reduce the amount of fuel on your fire, or increase your overall step count. So try to find ways to make that fire burn hotter so that it can burn more fuel, right? So that it can become smaller. So that's on the lower end. And if you're losing more than 1% per week via an average, that can indicate more of muscle loss problems. So you might be losing things more than just body fat, okay? So a rough range is about 0.5 to 1% of your body weight per week. Any more, any less over a sustained period can be problematic. In terms of weight loss duration, what we want to aim for is about 6 to 12 weeks in duration. Anything too short can lead to a lack of significant change, right? So if you do a weight loss phase for 2 weeks, you know, you might lose maybe like 0.5% or maybe 1% of your body weight. Might not be significant enough. And when we implement a new strategy for weight loss, it can take a couple of weeks for changes to be significant. So we want a minimum of 6 weeks. And then, you know, on that maximum end would be around 12 weeks in duration. So about 3 months in a pure weight loss phase before we transition back into like a maintenance phase and move on. Then in terms of like the total weight loss, you know, we don't really want to be losing more than about 10% of our body weight in one particular weight loss phase, meaning that kind of if we are dieting, maybe get 10 weeks in, we've lost 1% per week, you may want to end the weight loss phase at 10 weeks and then transition into like a maintenance phase, trying to maintain your weight and then move back into a structured weight loss phase. Now, again, this is all like theoretical stuff, right? So does it play out perfectly in the real world? Sometimes maybe not. And this is more suitable for someone who is a little bit more advanced, who has strong control over, you know, their food intake, their energy expenditure. You know, someone who really is a good Boy Scout to create fires, not someone who's first time out in the camp. Okay. So let's talk about some factors that can rear its head in our weight loss journey that can be like a negative factor for weight loss. Okay. So if we are dieting for more than 12 weeks, if we are losing more than 1% per week, or if we are losing more than 10% in one weight loss phase, some challenges that we face, firstly, is muscle loss. Okay, so the longer that we're dieting, the more muscle loss we risk losing. Now, when we lose muscle, it actually decreases our energy expenditure. So then what happens is as our energy expenditure decreases, we have to further decrease our energy intake to match that. Okay, so it ends up being this negative feedback loop of muscle loss and then decreased energy intake versus more muscle loss versus more energy decrease. So then you end up in a position where you're consuming, let's say, 1,000 calories, hating life and not seeing any more weight loss. So you kind of force yourself back into maintenance through these normal physiological pathways. So we don't really want to lose muscle at the end of the day. So long periods of weight loss can lead to more muscle loss. When we are in this weight loss phase, our performance decreases. So, you know, if you are consuming fewer calories, you know, we're not training as hard as we could if we're eating in a calorie surplus. So that can accentuate the, you know, muscle loss process and leads to that negative feedback loop over and over again. Other factors that happen when we are at low energy intakes is we see a decrease in our overall step count because we're just tired. So like if you wake up at 5 a.m., you know, at 3 p.m., you're not doing many steps. Same thing happens if we are in a sustained weight loss period over a long period of time, and that decreases our overall caloric expenditure or our metabolic rate. Other changes to our health occur at low caloric intakes or weight loss phases for long periods of time. So we can experience, you know, poor quality sleep, changes in our hormones, changes in our experience with hunger, increased stress, both physical, emotional, and mental stress. And other changes into our health. So we just feel like lethargic, feel like crap, you know, lots of fatigue and other kind of psychological things like, you know, mood swings and stuff. In terms of our training overall, you know, main thing is that decrease in performance, but then we also face problems with structured training programs through like deloads. So if you are going through periods where you are trying to resensitize a new training program, that low volume of training can lead to more muscle catabolism, meaning the breakdown of muscle. So at the end of the day, we don't want to be dieting for a really long period of time, right? We want to be in a structured weight loss phase for at most, you know, let's say 12 weeks or so, plus or minus a couple of weeks, losing about, you know, 10% of our body weight before we transition back into like a maintenance phase. You know, some people call that, you know, reverse dieting. Some people call that, you know, recovery time, where we are kind of in this maintenance zone where we can kind of recover these, side effects of dieting before we transition into a new goal. So what some will do, we'll go through a weight loss phase for that time, go through a maintenance phase, and then go back through a weight loss phase. So they stagger it through there. Now, in terms of weight gain, so if we're trying to build our fire, just quickly here, weight gain or muscle building goals are often like after the fact, meaning most people will start a fitness journey to lose weight, then they might transition into a weight gain phase. When we are going through a weight gain phase, primarily we're trying to build muscle. And we want to be gaining at a rate of 0.5 to 1% per month. It's much slower than our weight loss goals, where it's per week. We're trying to gain it per month, 0.5 to 1% per month, which ends up being about, you know, maybe 0.25 to 0.5% per week. So very small increments in weight gain. Our weight gain phase, similar, minimum 6 weeks. Anything less than that, you know, we want to see significant muscle growth. And, you know, the higher end is about this 12 to 18 weeks of muscle gaining phase. We can do it longer, but then we face some other challenges like we're about to go through. And similar to our weight loss, we don't really want to be gaining more than 10% of our body weight in one weight gain phase before we kind of go through either a maintenance or a weight loss phase. So some challenges that we face when we are going through weight gain, firstly, is we gain body fat. That's inevitable. So even if you are trying to gain muscle, we go through a process of gaining fat as well. The good thing is that once we gain the muscle, it's much harder to kind of build muscle than it is to maintain it. It's really easy to maintain muscle through a dieting phase. So you might gain, let's say, a kilo of muscle and then let's say maybe 2 kilos of body fat. So you gain 3 kilos in total, 1 kilo of muscle, 2 kilos of body fat. Once you go through a weight loss phase, it's really easy to lose that body fat and maintain that muscle. So long term, it's better to gain a little bit of body fat with a bit of muscle and then go through a weight loss phase once again. with increases in body mass, when we're gaining weight, it can change the range of motion. So let's say you gain a bit more you know, size around your thighs, you might not be able to squat as deep because your thighs are a little bit bigger, right? And as you get heavier, it can change the speed of movement. So let's say with squats, as you get heavier, you might not be able to move as quickly as if you were lighter. Similar problems around training is that through that weight loss, the weight gain phase, if we go through like a deload, it can lead to increases in fat gain over that period of time, and we will face some problems with sensitivity. But the main problems with weight gain is like that psychological side of things. So, you know, as we start to see the scales creep up, you know, it can mess with the head a little bit, it can mess with the health a little bit because, you know, you are, you know, slowly gaining weight, and that can have some negative effects to like our cardiovascular health and so on. That summarizes nutritional periodization. Again, it's more of an advanced concept. You know, it takes someone who is really disciplined in their body composition goals, someone who has good control over their food intake and energy expenditure, and someone who really knows how to control their fire. But once we kind of create this theoretical framework, we can start to periodize our program long-term where we go, okay, over the next year or 3 years or 10 years, this is my goal. I want to get down here. I want to get up here, down here, up here, and enjoy those times of up and down.
Whew. Cool.
What a summary.
Yeah, well, I've just been through that. So I'm coming out the other side. I'm in a weight loss phase at the moment. And I can tell you right now that it was the best thing I ever did because the shape that I'm producing now is like really good. I can see so many things that I didn't have before. New gifts. You know, nice shoulders and all sorts of stuff like that. And somebody on Instagram said to me, oh, isn't it great that you didn't gain any body fat? And I said, yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. And that's the thing that I really want to demystify for everybody. I sure did. And there was nothing wrong with that because that was my aim. Mm-hmm. My aim was to gain, and obviously, like as you said, within those parameters, but it's impossible not to. And it's actually not a bad thing.
No.
So you can lose it and you can gain it and it's all good. And yeah, I've found that this dieting phase hasn't been too bad really for me at all so far. So
yeah, I think that once you kind of like look at the bigger picture, right, where some of us are really looking at the micro's perspective, like the day-to-day, right, being like, oh my God, my body weight is this today, and, you know, cue freak out. Where if we kind of zoom out and look at the week, the month, the year, we go, okay, well, how, you know, in the bigger picture, is this working right now?
Yeah.
You know, right now I'm at 100 kilos. In 6 months' time, I want to be down at 90 kilos. That's 10% of my body weight down. I'm going to maintain 90 kilos for 6 weeks. And then I want to gain again, you know, aiming for, let's say, 105 kilos, right?
Yeah.
Where we're trying to build up size again. So then we go through this phase of, you know, build and then lean, build and lean, where over time we're building more muscle mass. We're developing our physique.
That's right. And you've got to remember also that your base weight that you've come back to is going to raise every time you lose body fat because you'll gain that muscle. So, you know, you might never be that previous weight that you were, but you might look so much better as well. So it's like it's an awesome topic to chat about. And definitely parameters to think about to keep you on track are your numbers in the gym. That's where it comes in handy.
Because
you can squat stuff that you've never squatted before, that's found. Right.
Like even now, like I've gone through a prolonged weight gain phase with maintenance sprinkled in, where I haven't really completed a structured weight loss phase in a while. Even though when I look at my actual body composition, I haven't noticed a very significant change in, you know, body fat, right? If you look at some older videos from like the Max and Maxine challenge, I was much skinnier, much smaller legs, and now I'm a lot more thicker with 2 C's, right? Which is a good thing. Along with that has come a little bit of body fat. That's fine, no dramas. But as I go through these maintenance phases, I find that, you know, I haven't gained a lot of body fat. A lot of it has been a lot of muscle mass, which is awesome. And I know that when I go through a structured fat loss phase, then, you know, we'll see a very different physique. Yeah. And I'm really happy that I've gone through this muscle building phase because if I stayed at maintenance, you know, for a while, I wouldn't have seen much of a change.
Yeah.
You know, over the past 5 years, I would have just been spinning my legs and I'd look at photos and go, oh, well, I haven't really improved my squat or my deadlift. I haven't really improved my physique. Like, what have I been doing for 5 years?
Yeah.
Whereas now I go, geez, like I warm up with my max, or my squats and my deadlifts and my bench press, you know, my clothes don't fit me anymore, right? Around the good parts, around my arms or my legs. And, you know, my belt is always really loose, so around my waist is fine. So these are all like positive things, and it's about the reframe of it.
That's right. Yeah, I've never had more people give me good feedback about the way that I look, including like even people that are like in the bodybuilding world. And it's like, wait a minute, I tried to be small for so long and that wasn't the answer.
Yeah.
And it's so weird the way that you perceive yourself versus the way that others see, because they can see shape and silhouettes and stuff like that. So it's worth it, but it's a hard slog at first because of all the factors that you mentioned there. But the psychological thing, you have to kind of get over it somehow.
You do. Yeah. You do. Nick, let's move on to some questions for the week. So some questions from our community. Now, if you have a question for us, you can check out the comments section down below. So you'll be able to see a link to a little form you can fill out and you can ask us a question and we're going to answer it here in this podcast. So the first question here is, do you stick to the plan as written or do you do your own thing? So Nick, you can answer this one. We're talking about the challenge here. You know, do we stick to the challenge training plan or do you do your own thing? What advice do you have for this person?
Oh gosh, this is the universal question for anything, like when you have a coach or you go into a structured plan, like do you decide to stick to it or do you do your own thing? Even people in my spin classes over the years I've had people that have brought headphones that they just want to sit in there. So you just, there's a lot of different people do different things. Firstly, I'd just like to say, like, if you've been doing your own thing and you're happy doing your own thing, then there's probably no point in investing in a plan and coaching. So that's what I'd probably start off with saying. However, I've mellowed in my years and I just think everybody needs to do what suits them. But the thing is with this, if there's a structured plan and we're advising something and we're telling you, this is how you get from A to B in the best way that we know how, in the healthiest way, that's the most sustainable, and then you say, no, I want to run in between, then we don't necessarily have the map to get you back to point A or to the other side. So stick to the plan is what we'd say because we wrote the plan, TBH, to be honest. That's what my kids text me. So stick to the plan. I like to stick to the plan. I don't do my own thing. I am very planny. So I would say out of A and B, I would say, please stick to the plan.
I like it. Mm. Yeah. I think just bringing it back to an analogy is, let's say we put you in the forest, right? Or the bush, we're in Australia, right? And we give you a map. Here's the plan. You know, we're currently at, you know, this intersection of a road. We're going to hike through the bush and we're going to get to that intersection of the road. We may know the path. We've walked it a few times and we're going to give you the map and say, okay, good luck, follow the map and follow the path, follow the plan, and you'll get to the other side of the road. You, of course, could go on your own way. You might be like, oh, nah, Steve, I've been here before. I know where I'm going. Great, happy days. But it might be worth reflecting on, you know, why you chose to join the challenge, why you chose to follow a plan that someone else might have written for you, whether it be the challenge or another plan or another coach, whatever it is. And reflecting on, okay, well, why did I sign up to this? If what I've been doing in the past has worked, why am I not seeing the results that I'd like to see? And, you know, there is this concept in training of this idea of a lifetime intermediate where someone never actually becomes an advanced person. And the reason that happens is because they are unable to complete a training program where those individuals love to program hop, where they might do, you know, a 5x5 one week and then they go to, you know, another style of training and then they jump into the latest craze on Instagram and they follow their YouTube, you know, favorite YouTuber, they follow their plan for a week and they just program hop all the time and they never actually complete a program. So I will invite you to complete a program. I will invite you to try something new and I will invite you to think beyond a lifetime intermediate and get into that advanced phase where you followed a structured plan and make your way through the bush and get to the other road.
Definitely. And really that applies so much to resting as well because people always want to do more. That's so right. I would say take your breaks when you're supposed to on this hike. Eat your scroggin. That's what it used to be called.
Scroggin.
Do you know scroggin?
No.
It's basically a mixture of nuts and chocolate and lollies that you were allowed to eat when you were younger. It's like a trail mix. Yeah, but it's called scroggin. Eat your scroggin.
Eat your scroggin. One thing I've been doing a bit with my training lately is just simplifying it.
Yeah.
Right. So if I zoom out maybe 2 years ago, I used to want to do like all the exercises, right? Like, you know, if I'm training my upper body, all right, I've got shoulders, I've got back, I've got chest, I've got biceps, I've got triceps, and I've got a few exercises for each one. So when I look at it, I'm doing, let's say 10 exercises, right? And then over the past, let's say 2 or 3 years, I just simplified it more and more. And now I'm down to 3 exercises per training session. I might do a few more sets, where in the past I used to do maybe two sets. Now I'm doing closer to like four sets or so. So the volume is very similar, but the process of simplifying my training just makes it easier. So I go into the gym, I'm like, all right, I've got three exercises to do. I'm doing calf raises for my calves. I'm doing like a stiff legged deadlift for my hamstrings. I'm doing a squat for my quads, right? I've hit all my lower body. I've got those three exercises. And then by simplifying it, the plan, without doing more, I'm doing less. And just making it easier, both mentally, physically, and actually just doing it, committing to those three things.
And you're getting results.
Yeah. And then watching, you know, like, let's say my reps go up through those three exercises, or watching my weight go up through those three exercises, and using those exercises, playing around with those technique of those three exercises, because it's just simple. It's all right, instead of trying to learn, you know, 10 exercises, I now need to master three. And, you know, every meso, every 4 to 6 weeks, I might change it. So instead of doing a back squat, I might do a front squat. Or instead of doing a stiff legged deadlift, I might do like more of a, like an RDL style, or maybe more of a good morning or something like that. So similar movement pattern, but slightly different. So yeah, just a food for thought, you know, simplify it, make it easier for yourself.
I agree.
Nick, next question here is, how much protein should I consume per meal? Ooh, okay. Interesting. This is a common question I see on, you know, media, like social media. How much protein should I consume? And often it's around like, you know, what's the maximum amount of protein you can absorb? You know, similar ways to ask that question. Now, the most common study cited is that, you know, we want to be aiming for about 20 to 25 grams of protein per meal. Okay, that's the one that's most often cited. And I remember getting into this argument at uni, right back at uni, with the person who was taking us through nutrition, saying that you can only absorb 20 grams of protein per meal. And I was like, no, like if you consume protein, you're going to absorb it. You can't, your body doesn't look at the amount of protein you consume and it reaches a threshold of like 20 grams and then the rest just passes through your bowel. Like your body's going to absorb
it. How did they figure that out in the first place? So where does it come from, that idea?
Yeah, it comes from a study around the synthesis around leucine and BCAAs. So the way that our body synthesizes protein is through a threshold, a leucine threshold, which equates to around 20 grams of protein is around that threshold. So that's kind of where it came from, which isn't true. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, this is one thing we're talking about, but then we can't extrapolate that to something else saying like, how much protein can I absorb? It's like, well, you can't answer that question by saying, how do we pass through the leucine threshold? Because it's not the right, it's like talking about two different things. It's like, it's like saying, oh, what car should I drive down the road? It's like, well, you can ride your bike. It's like, well, no, it's a different answer, right?
So what did your professors and stuff say back to you when you argued with them?
Well, they were quoting those studies. And I was like, well, no, you can't say you can't absorb this protein, right? So it was more of a semantics thing, right? So the main takeaway here is absorption of protein, how much protein should I consume is very different to how much protein do I need to hit the leucine threshold, okay? So more and more studies over time, because uni days were a few years ago, we've had some lots of fresh research coming out, is that we absorb all the protein we consume. So let's say you had a really big steak, you know, half kilo steak in front of you, you ate it, and then, I don't know, you had a protein shake as well. Yeah. Maybe you're following a carnivore diet, so you're only eating protein. Guess what? You're going to absorb all that protein, right? You're going to metabolize that as fuel. You're going to go through a process of gluconeogenesis, convert that protein into glucose. You're going to use that glucose in your body. So you are going to absorb all that protein. Now, how do we hit that leucine threshold? What's the best way to break down our food intake, and how much protein should we absorb per meal? Okay, so if we're looking at a rough meal intake of about 4 to 7 meals per day, we know that the minimum meals per day that we want is about 4. We want about 4 servings of protein per day so that we hit this concept of a leucine threshold. If you're not sure what leucine threshold is, I'm going to invite you to go and check out the Understanding Nutrition mini series that I recorded. You better find that on the app in the Learn section, also on the Facebook group in the Guide section. And per meal, we want to be aiming for about 0.4 grams per kilo of body weight per meal. Okay, so I'll say that again, 0.4 grams per kilo of body weight per meal. So that equates to around 1.6, 4 meals a day, or about 2 grams per kilo of body weight, about 5 meals per day. That's what we want to aim for, so that we can hit this leucine threshold. Super summary of leucine is the primary amino acid that synthesizes protein. Synthesize means creating protein. And if we have a very low protein intakes or very low doses of protein, let's say about 0.2 grams per meal per day, prolonged low sources of protein per dose, per bolus we call, can limit muscle protein synthesis. So this is the real tail end stuff, Nick. So this is the real stuff where, you know, if you want to be a diehard around how much muscle you can build, a real meathead, you know, this is the stuff we want to care about. But if you are, you know, just trying to focus on losing some weight, you know, these might be like the lower ends of the priority. But really fascinating to think about. So the main summary is, how much should I consume? Aim for about 0.4 grams per kilo of body weight. You will absorb everything you eat, because if you only ate protein, guess what? You're going to consume all that protein. you know, it's the same as if you were lost out in the wilderness and you were hunting a deer, you got that deer and you just decided to only eat that deer or deer. You made the fire, you cooked the steak, and that was the only thing you were eating. Guess what? You're going to live off that protein. Your body doesn't go, well, you've only consumed 20 grams of protein, that's all you're going to consume, and then the rest is going to pass through your bowels. It doesn't quite work like that.
So, yeah, if you want to take the train to Gainesville.
0.4 grams per kilo of body weight.
Especially if it's a deer. No, poor deer.
Nick, next question. We're talking about ab training.
Yes.
What are the best ab exercises? What a strong word.
I know, best. Yeah. That's the thing, because, like, it depends. But yeah, so can I just tell you my two favorites?
Tell me.
My faves currently. I don't like any. But if I had to choose the ones that I don't like, I don't mind reverse crunches, where you hold onto the top and you can actually move the bench all the way down if you want to do the flat. But reverse crunches are quite good. I find them to be quite good. But if you're not up to reverse crunches, you can also do them. I suppose you have to really hold your body weight up, but hanging leg raises are quite good as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I find that you can sort of use your hip flexors a bit too much in reverse crunches if you're not good at them yet. But I do find that they are quite good. Now, I know that people like to think that that's going to make you see your abs. It doesn't. It's your diet, but it helps to build what's under there.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I just like a classic floor crunch, but I like it holding a dumbbell against my chest. And I can't be bothered being too macho about it, so I do anchor my feet under something, or someone sits on my feet if I let them. And I like to do that. But you don't come all the way up, so you maintain the tension. You only come about halfway up. So it's not about swinging up and down. It's just about maintaining that control.
Yeah.
And as you said before, as you get lighter, well, you didn't exactly say this, but as I'm getting lighter, I'm finding them easier, because obviously my gains must have been all up in my trunk, because I'm like, oh, hang on, this is easier. I don't think I'm getting any stronger. I think it's just that I'm losing body fat, so it's actually a little bit easier to do the weeks go by.
Yeah.
So they would be my top two that I don't mind doing. They never get any easier. I don't know why.
Mm.
Not a fan, but I do a couple of things at the end of maybe once a week, to be honest. I'm not a huge Abby Kid Abby person.
Abby Kid Abby.
But they're my two best bang for buck, I find. But I can only let you know in maybe 3 or 4 weeks, I reckon we'll be able to see what's gone on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll be able to tell you for sure, because I'll be able to see what I've been doing.
I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got lots of thoughts around ab training.
Yeah.
If I was to label down to my top two, I'm going to go with squats and deadlifts.
Yeah, I know that, but like, I get you.
Yes.
But the direct.
Yeah. So, I feel like we've spoken about this in not too long ago podcast, maybe 10 episodes or so ago. Look, I think when we're training the abs, we need to be, again, particular with semantics. We're trying to train the rectus abdominis, ab muscle. We're not trying to train our core, which is like the deep stabilizers.
Yeah.
So, you know, core training could be like, you know, maybe some single leg work. We're training the core, right? Where we're training those muscles that attach onto the spine. And we're trying to resist movement through the core training. When we're training our abs, we're trying to train those abdominal muscles. So when we're talking about the rectus abdominis, the six-pack muscle, I'm looking at this through the eyes of maybe like a rehab person. You know, I'm an osteopath. I see individuals with back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And I see even myself when I was powerlifting a month or two ago, I accumulated a little bit of pain in my low back. What I was finding was that I was losing my ability to flex my lumbar spine, my lower back, okay? And you might check this out yourself. So if you go to, let's say, go to touch your toes, maybe get a little glimpse of yourself from side on in the mirror, you might be able to see your lower back, and it might be something like, you know, maybe it's really flat in the lower back and then you bend a lot through the upper back, okay? In the lumbar spine, we want about, you know, 20 to 30 degrees of flexion through each segment of your lumbar spine. And if you lose that ability to flex, you know, that's where the rectus abdominis comes in, right? Where it flexes the spine. So if you can't flex the spine, you can't contract your abs, right? It's like saying, if you can't lift your arm up over your head, you can't think about training your deltoids or your shoulders, right? You can probably still get your arm up if you did something like lean or maybe use like your pec to help lift your arm up, but you can't train your deltoids if you can't lift your arm up. Same thing with your abs. If you can't flex your lumbar spine, the rectus abdominis is very minimally going to contract. So my advice, if you want to train your abs, is to learn how to contract and move your spine, okay? And my best go-to is actually one of them being what you said, Nick, with a reverse ab crunch.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I made it into the Coach Steve Hall of Fame.
Yeah. So what it...
That was an accident.
What it's really nice to do is it's like a bottom-up movement, yeah. Right? Because you're using like the bottom lever as opposed to a top-down movement where you're using the upper lever as in your upper body. So what you can do is you just hug your knees. So you take yourself into full flexion through your spine and then control, like slowly lower your legs back down and lower your hips back down and try to feel like your low back, you know, rolling onto the floor, the mat or the bench, wherever you're doing it. And you may find that there's a certain point, like for me, it's around like that middle lower back. So more specifically, maybe L3, L4, where I kind of miss it. So I kind of go, you know, I feel the first little bit, feel the second little bit, and then it's kind of nothing, and then my tailbone touches.
Right.
So for me, I'm really focusing on that last little bit. And once I really think and be like, okay, how can I move my body so I feel that bottom little part of my spine contract, I get this ridiculous abdominal cramp.
Yeah.
Right? Because my abs are going through this new contraction, being like, what the fuck?
Right? Yeah. Hard.
It's like, you know, lifting your arm up for the first time, yeah. Your deltoids would be like, what the fuck is this, right? Yeah. It's like with my abs when I'm doing that motion. So if you can't feel your abs, or maybe you're doing your abs and your hips are hurting or your neck's hurting because you're trying to pull up or something like that, try to just break it down. Do it super slow. You don't need to do like, you know, 100 sit-ups to get abs.
No,
you might do like one really good sit-up. You feel your abs contract and then you're in a heap being like, oh my God, I felt my abs for the first time. Once you can restore that lumbar flexion, then you're using your abs tenfold through activities of daily living, and you might not even need to do any direct ab work. Okay. But I digress. I've got lots of ideas around abs.
Yeah. Look, I must say, I really don't do heaps.
No.
But yeah, it's because I'm in the gym all the time doing everything. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, good.
Last question here. When are machines better than free weights?
Ooh,
I like this one.
Yeah, Arnold, when?
When? Come on. So the question often is, you know, what's better, machines or free weights? But I like this is like, when are machines better than free weights? Okay. It's a little bit of a directed question. Okay. So briefly talking about the two differences, free weights, we're talking about maybe dumbbells or barbells. And it's not just like one or the other. It's a little bit of a spectrum, right? Where maybe the dumbbell is a bit more of this like free weight idea. Then as we kind of transition to like a barbell, it's a little bit more like more stability requirements, and then maybe like a Smith machine, you know, it's a bit more free weighty, but then also in the machine world, and then we've got like full-on commercial machines. So how do we define the two in the spectrum is around the stability requirements and the path of the load, okay? So free weights have a huge stability requirement. So if you're doing a dumbbell chest press, you need to control that dumbbell through a huge plane of movement, because it can, you know, move to the left, move to the right, move up, it can move down, it can move forward, backwards. So it's got like, you know, it can go all over the place. So it's a huge stability requirement. Now, just like a cannon, the cannon goes boom. If you put a cannon on the ground in a big cement heap and, you know, you support it, give it lots of stability, the cannon can go boom and shoot the cannon in a really far way. But if you put that cannon on like a boat, right, a really small, like little, like a dinghy, right? That cannon is not going to be able to shoot very far because it's not stable. Same thing happens in the body, where if you are unstable, right, using free weights or maybe trying to take the stability through a crazy thing, like, you know, maybe you're trying to do earthquake work or Bosu ball work or trying to create instability for whatever reason, you can't contract as much as you normally can. And this is a safety thing in the body. It's really cool. So if you were, let's say, a monkey, right? Yeah. You're a human monkey. You're up in the tree and you are walking on a branch and you take a step on the branch and you notice that it's unstable. Your body, your nervous system is not going to let you like put your full body weight onto that branch because it knows it's going to break. It's not stable. It doesn't feel safe. So this is a very, you know, safety mechanism that's built into the body, really cool, where you just won't be able to create as much force. That's a stability requirement. So when we look at, let's say, building muscle, when we look at, let's say, developing strength, we need to find a way to maximally exert force on the body. This is where machines can be helpful because the stability requirements are much lower on machines. So if you, let's say, go on a leg press, you lay down, you're nice and safe in this machine, you push against this solid force and you press, you know, you can apply lots of load through your legs, you know, hundreds of kilos. People can squat, you know, 200, 300 kilos, sorry, rephrase that. People can leg press 200, 300 kilos, and then they go to squat and they struggle to squat, let's say, a barbell back squat of 50 kilos, right? So they're able to produce force when they're stable, but when they need to provide their own stability, they're unable to produce that force. So this is where machines can come in handy because you can, simply create more force. And we know that force or tension on the muscle leads to really high hypertrophy signaling, okay? The other thing to consider is the range of motion and then the path of the load. So this is where machines might have some limitations. I know this question was, when are machines better? But let's say you're a really tall person, really broad shoulders, and you're going to do, let's say, a machine row. And in this machine row, it's got, you know, one handle, it's in a straight line. And as when you go to row, like, you know, it just feels awkward. You can't really change your hand position and it rows in a, you know, maybe a straight line. But if you were to do, let's say, a single arm dumbbell row, in that row pattern, you might be able to row in more of an arc fashion, okay? So when you row in a machine, it might be in a straight line versus when you row with free weights, it's more of an arc pattern. So this can become problematic sometimes because you can't really change the way the machines work. It might be in a straight line, it might be in an awkward angle. But then sometimes on the flip side, because of the machine, because it's in a certain path, like an arc shape or like in a round motion, or maybe it curves in, you might be able to get a nice contraction in, let's say, your lats or your pecs, where you can't do that in a free weight version because of the technical proficiency. Like, let's say you're trying to do a single arm dumbbell row, you've never done one before, and you don't know that the dumbbell moves in like an arc fashion, right, rather than a straight line. If you've got a machine that does that for you, just grab hold and pull. It does it for you. Less things to worry about. And then if you think of the mental requirements, okay, if there's less things to mentally think about other than just grab and pull, all right, that might lead to more performance outcomes. So it's a little bit more of a nuanced conversation. When is it better? What's better? Why is it better? But it's definitely a scale. For me, lately, Nick, I've been using a lot more machines.
Yeah.
I love machines. Especially if you find a really good machine that you feel like it's built for your body, right? If you know how to adjust machines, maybe the seat height, the angle, those types of things. I'm a little bit weird. I grab other handles to use on machines so I can get a little bit more rotation in my arms. I use wrist wraps on machines. Like I use my towel times to, you know, prop up my body in different things. So I'm in that phase where I don't just use the machine. I like modify the machine to make it work for me, right? Yeah. You don't need to be there yet. But once you learn more about the movement and how to contract your muscle, that's when you can start to manipulate the machine to make it work for you. Manipulate the machine, what am I, a Terminator or something? Yeah, exactly. Right? Once you get that working, you know, it can be better for, you know, things like the pump, for tension, for muscle growth, for strength. And for me, my strategy is to build some good quality, you know, hardware, some muscles, so that when I transition back into powerlifting, I've got a little bit more machinery so that I can, you know, squat more, deadlift more, bench press more.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to go to a gym with excellent machines.
Yeah, I've been there. Yeah, I'm a little bit jealous.
It's really good. Really good. So I do a bit of both as well.
Yeah. But, you know, talking about, again, I'll just highlight the machines. They're definitely in a spectrum where on one side of things, you've got like dumbbells. And then as you transition, you've got maybe barbells, a bit more stability, Smith machines. You've got cables kind of thrown in there. And then you've got like full on machines. And then you've got like pin load machines. It's a very big spectrum. All with their pros and cons. And, you know, there's no dogma here. There's no one way is better than the other. It's just theoretical. This could be better for X, Y, and Z reason.
That's right.
But Nick, let's wrap up there for episode number 69 of the Challenge Weekly Show. It's been a fun episode because it's my mum's birthday. Happy birthday, mum.
Happy birthday.
And of course, it's been an exciting week because it is the launch week of our M Challenge app. So if you haven't already, go to the mchallenge.com.au website. You can join the M Challenge. You'll be able to join up until the 11th of July, maybe a few days afterwards. Once you register, once you join, you can download the M Challenge app. So that's on iOS, M Challenge, or an Android. Search for M Challenge, all one word. And once you download that app, you can log in, of course, once you registered via our website, and you have access to a whole range of features like we've spoken about today. If you enjoyed this episode, go check out our 68 other episodes, you know, a good week and a half full-time listening to Coach Nick and myself talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge. And we'll catch you next week for episode number 70.
See you guys. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend.
Or leave us a review on iTunes to spread the good word. See you next time.